If you're interested in starting your very own podcast, Blueberry is one of the top hosting companies in the world. You can get your first month free with Blueberry by using the promo code CINEMAVINO. You can also use the hosting estimator on their site to determine the best plan for you. And don't forget, that's CINEMAVINO to get your first month free. CINEMAVINO. This is going to be a special mini episode talking about Dune.
Dunecast.
Well, Dune 2021.
We're Dune at Tune It. Something like that.
Dune.
Yeah. It's like we're going to use the Halloween music just because I'm lazy.
Well, it's October.
Exactly. So
every podcast is Halloween-y.
Yeah. I want to get as much mileage out of that music as I can.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sean Jordan is a big Dune fan.
That is an understatement. I finished Dune 3 last night, Children of Dune.
Ooh.
The book. The movie doesn't exist yet.
Nerd! Guys, we don't have Taylor with us tonight.
Taylor actually received his second rabies shot. He got his rabies booster.
This is third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were worried he was going to be starting to froth at the mouth a little bit. He might bite somebody, so.
He already was getting a little frothy.
Yeah.
They were worried it was going to make him too strong. Like, mm-hmm. Extra baby strength, so it'd be as strong as a man.
It's his plus third a baby, super soldier
much
serum,
like Dwight Schrute.
And so, hopefully, this will contain his berserker rage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, he'll be with us next time.
And, like, you know, hopefully, bring the swelling down on the elephantitis of his penis.
Yes, that's a big fingers crossed. Y'all be praying that
we're gonna start a GoFundMe if it gets any worse.
Yes, hopefully, he can fit back in his pants.
Wait, did I say fund me?
So Dune.
Dune.
Travis, what would you rate your fandom of Dune on a scale of 1 to 10?
I am very new to Dune. I have known about it, but I only watched the original movie less than a year ago. And the original movie was good, but it seemed rushed at the end.
The original movie was, well, we'll get there, but the original movie was like basically just a retelling of the book. They copy and pasted pieces from the book right into the script.
Yeah. Which is like rule number one, screenwriting class. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Bad things happen.
I enjoyed this new one too, because I've since watched the new Dune twice, and then after watching it, went back and watched the old Dune twice.
Yeah.
So I'm on board for the next film.
The next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Dune 2.
Yeah.
Part 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
This time, more sand. Extra worms.
Like more ornithopters, yeah. Honestly.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
The dragonfly ornithopters are awesome.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yep.
So, questions for Sean here. Let you talk away a little bit. So, I was a big fan of the book and the books. I assume you've read quite a few of the books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's 6 originally written by Frank Herbert,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a number of books written by his son and one other person who kind of took on the mantle, and they've done prequels, sequels, you know, written around the Duneverse post Frank Herbert's passing.
Yeah. How does the movie compare to your vision of the books and how you imagine them being movies?
I thought it was excellent. So in terms of telling the story of Dune, there's so much complexity that happens in the book itself that is hard to capture. There's a lot of interplay of politics and economics that Frank Herbert really writes into his books that's really woven into everything. And he does a really good job of, you know, great details when he writes of building this world on Arrakis. And I think they did a really good job of capturing it as best you could without getting into any sort of narration or, you know, blatant exposition, which I think is the pitfall that the 1984 movie fell into.
Yes.
So
should we do non-spoilers at the beginning half of this and then tell people to tune out so we can do a deep dive?
I think we could. I think, or we could revisit this later with spoilers. I think it's, so far, I think we're good. I mean, we can talk about it as it compares to the previous movie and the books without getting too heavy into spoilers.
I want to get pretty heavy into details.
Yeah, if you want to do spoilers, let's do it.
Yeah, I want to go full bore on spoilers. Mm-hmm.
All right, you heard it here. We're
spoiling it from here on. Deep. If you haven't seen the movie or read the book, read the book and see the movie.
Yeah.
But... Mm-hmm.
The safeties are off.
Yeah,
so
safety's then off.
Can we, for our any listeners that have never heard of Dune or know exactly what it is, give us a quick synopsis so that they could jump in?
So quick synopsis, which is hard to do because there's a lot of complexity to it. The future year 10,000 something odd in the future, the humans have scattered across a number of planets. And there's a handful of warring families that all roll up to one emperor. And the emperor basically said, like, guess what, Atreides, you guys win. You're going to take over this planet that creates the spice that everyone relies on. So your bad guys, the Harkonnens, they're out. They're going to... So
Atreides is House Stark. Harkonnen is basically House Lannister.
Right.
If you're thinking of in those...
If you wanted to think in those terms. And then the emperor is King... Baratheon. So he basically says, like, you guys are in, those guys are out, you know, it's your planet, do with it what you will. And then in the back, he's just like, hey, Harkonnens, by the way, you're my guys. I'm going to help you out. We're going to kill those guys. You're going to sneak attack them. And then in a nutshell, that happens. Paul, who is the son and the heir of Atreides, he and his mother.
Jon Snow.
Yeah. He and his mother basically fuck off to the desert, which is everything that is Arrakis. And they find that, like, one, he has special powers that have now awakened during this process, and he has to survive the desert. And the movie kind of cuts off there. That's where the movie sort of stops, is once his powers awaken, he meets up with the Fremen, which are the locals of Arrakis. And the Fremen are like, whoa, dude, you're kind of cool. Come hang out with us. And then they're like, check it out. We've got all these secrets that you don't know about. And then... scene. That's the end of Dune part one.
Yeah. They're like, man, like, you were so thin and pale and your hair is like in front of your face. It's all cool.
Mm-hmm. And so, I've got a good question here at this point. So in film school, they teach you the log line, the concept of a log line where it's like, whatever script you're writing, whatever idea you have, you know, eventually you're going to have to get in front of a producer or somebody like that, a director. And you're going to have to summarize your idea in one or two sentences, like 20 seconds or less. You're going to have to spit this idea out. And so, like, any great movie, you go back and it has a great log line. You know, like, in the 30s, a globetrotting archaeologist races to capture the Ark of the Covenant before it falls in the hands of the Nazis. Period. That's your...
Alan Quartermain?
Exactly. Oh. Yeah, it's Romancing the Stone.
Okay.
So... My question is, and maybe this feeds in the idea of why this material was thought of as being unfilmable for so long. How would you summarize Dune in one or two sentences?
It's Star Wars, but they never leave Tatooine.
Okay.
he is the chosen one. It's the classic movie trope of him being the chosen one, but he finds himself having to learn about himself to avenge the death of his father at the hands of Baron Harkonnen.
Okay. So it's like a classic, like, revenge tale.
Revenge tale.
In space.
Yeah. So one thing we had talked about off mic was that Frank Herbert actually got mad because he thought Star Wars was ripping off Dune too much, to the point that he thought about suing. And George Lucas, I think, was basically pointing out that all things are just amalgamations of things from the past, and that he based a lot of his stuff off The Foundation. And Dune also based a lot of
which was inspired by
The Foundation. Yeah, it came out on Apple TV like a year ago, and I don't know how they watched it back then, but
but it's a book called by Isaac Asimov.
Okay. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Foundation.
Yeah, it's a classic sci-fi, and it went on to inspire, you know, sci-fi as we know it today.
Yeah.
Can we just for me, instead of calling him Frank Herbert, the author of Dune, can we just call him Herbie?
Herbie?
Herb.
Yeah, we can. I like Herbie.
Cool.
Herbs, herbology.
Old, yeah.
Old Herbie.
Mm-hmm. Old Herbs.
So there was also, I asked you off mic about the 90s Dune
miniseries.
Miniseries, I guess it was on Sci-Fi.
I have not seen it. Yeah,
I think it was not on streaming Sci-Fi. Anywhere that I know of.
I think they buried it as much as they could.
Yeah. I started watching it and could not continue.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about it, and I was like, oh, maybe I want to go watch it. Sci-Fi,
right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, my point of view is, like, I watched, never read the books. I watched the 84, whatever, Dune, 85. Whenever
84, yeah.
And it just frustrated me because I felt like a lot of stuff was being left out of it. It felt incomplete to me.
Well, the problem with the 84 Dune, and this is my personal opinion, is they tried to write it verbatim from the book to include all the political points and all of the, one of the mechanics of books is that you can understand the thoughts of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the screenwriter of the 1984 Dune thought, I cannot write this movie without including that. So we'll just have them sort of like whisper whenever they're thinking to themselves.
Yeah, I thought they were speaking telepathically every time they were
doing that. No, it is just very uncomfortable. You're hearing their thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's so many better ways to do exposition. And mm-hmm. they crammed like the first half of the book into about 2 hours of the movie and the second half of the book into about 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed after watching the original, an hour and 26 minutes in the original Dune is the entirety of the new Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Like they give you basically all that extra political, but they,
if you watched the 1984 movie,
extra,
the part where he goes, Dad, the sleeper
has
awakened. That's about the part that they break mm-hmm. between Dune part one and Dune part two.
That was my only problem with the new Dune, Momoa Dune, as I like to call it.
Uh-huh. The Momoa verse.
Yes. The one, they don't really explain, I guess, the Mentats.
That's one
which
of
are
thoughts.
Because I guess yeah. computers are outlawed, so, and there are people that are basically calculators now.
There was a war that happened against AI back in, you know, thousands of years prior. So computers are essentially outlawed. Artificial intelligence is completely outlawed, which makes this one far and away the most different sci-fi movie or series out of anything. So what they did was they've genetically bred and trained people to be Mentats, which are essentially amazing probability calculators. So Thufir Hawat is the Atreides team. Mentat. So he's the guy whose eyes sort of like roll at the back of his head.
Yeah, and tells how many millions it, yeah.
Right, and then the Harkonnen's Mentat is Piotr. So he is that kind of like tall, skinny guy.
Yeah, he's the guy that's in Ant-Man, and he's, what else is
he's in Dark Knight, too.
Is he?
Yeah.
He is the guy, one of the Joker's people that like mm-hmm. is crazy and like.
But what they,
he's a guy in Ant-Man that's always talking about Baba Yaga.
What they don't touch on in the movie that they do touch on in the book is that Peter is corrupted. He is a Mentat who has been essentially manipulated into. Mentats are by nature just neutral creatures. They not creatures, but people. They work for the houses as like, I'm going to crunch the numbers for you. And I'm going to tell you like the probability of that happening is like zero to, you know, whatever. Piotr has been manipulated, basically take into account immoral acts and say that this is the best approach you can do. You know, this is how we can win by bending morality. And that was one of the main things that they did to win over the Atreides. So they don't really get into the depth of how the Harkonnens beat the Atreides. So Dr. Yue, the guy who actually...
With a diamond forehead.
Right. So they don't get into this, but doctors by nature are conditioned to where they cannot harm anybody. So the way that the Harkonnens won was they broke that conditioning and they got Yue to... They basically kidnapped Yue's wife, tortured her, and then they said, listen, we'll give you your wife back if you... betray the Atreides and let us do this whole thing. So that's the linchpin of the whole plan. That doesn't happen if you don't have a corrupted Mentat. That doesn't happen if you have a doctor that is not conditioned to do that. So those are two big differences between the book and the story, but I don't think it really takes away from the movie. Maybe it looks like a loophole in the story if you're trying to watch it and you don't fully understand. But yeah, that's how that happened.
So there's, obviously they didn't expand on the Mentats in the original as well. But that was one thing I had heard people said. But the thing I really liked in the original movie was Paul Atreides' dad, Leto, at the very beginning, right before they go to Arrakis, has a whole speech about the sleeper will awaken. And that, you know, is the last line, and it's kind of weird and creepy. But like his little, and it's not a speech, it's like two or three sentences about how a person needs change in order to like learn things and grow and you know, change their outlook. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, I can apply this to my own life. Like, oh shit, that's deep. And I was waiting for that in this film, and they didn't really have it at all. Like, yeah. They had the moment on the cliffs looking at the cemetery when he's looking at
the back
grandfather's. Yeah, all that stuff. But so, I didn't see that, and I was like, oh, you bastard. I was wanting to see that scene.
Yeah, and one thing,
I was wanting to see Oscar Isaac.
I don't know how much they're going to go into this in the movie in part two, if they do at all, but the whole premise of how the powers come about, like, because they never really explain, is it supernatural? Is it like, how does Paul have these powers of prescience? It's not just spice. It's not just that he's specifically attuned to spice. It's that he is the convergence of two very specific eugenics programs happening in the Dune world.
Oh.
So he is bred to be a Mentat, but he is also bred to be a Bene Gesserit witch. So the Bene Gesserit use extreme fine tuning of their muscles and their bodies to do incredible feats. So the voice is a manipulation of the voice to a point that it can control other people's actions for a very brief amount of time. It takes advantage of their, takes advantage of like their response to voices and tweaks it to a point that you can basically control people. A Mentat's ability is to calculate all of the previous actions that have happened, say, this is what makes the most sense, this is the most probable outcome. Now, when you combine those two into what becomes the Kwisatz Haderach, is that you become someone who can crunch the probability of everything, but you also have the full history of everything from the Bene Gesserit side, which is something that nobody's ever had before.
Oh, okay.
So when the Bene Gesserit say that Paul is the amalgamation of this long program and he's, you know, all of these eugenic pieces coming together, what it is that they normally have women only in the Bene Gesserit program, and that he was the first male and only male. And when you do that, the Bene Gesserits also have access to the memories of their ancestors, but only on the women's side because they're all women. When they have a male Bene Gesserit, he has access to the memories of all his ancestors on the women and the men's side. So he has an immense amount of data coming into his mind, and then his Mentat training can basically predict the future using all of those inputs.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And then the spice melange can enhance that?
Exactly. Okay, so the spice...
He specifically is sensitive to it, and it enhances any and all of the...
Right. It basically opens up all your mental passageways and says, this is what's going to happen. So when he first arrives on Dune, that's what really activates his power, is like something clicks. His first exposure to immense amounts of spice when he's out in the desert, abandoned, that's what really like... That's the sleeper awakening.
Nice. Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, because they don't really explain where his powers come from, other than like, oh, he's the spice. Mm-hmm. It does the spice thing.
And then you have the Mentats, the Bene Gesserit, and isn't there another? Oh, the other thing I didn't love about this film was Baron Harkonnen in the original. I thought was so much better. He's so much more of an evil, weird, creepy dude. This one, it just didn't get me. It looked like, I can't remember the actor's name, but he's just playing the same role that he played in the movie King Arthur with Clive Owen. He was like a
Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Mm-hmm. He played some crazy barbarian dude in there that just like, you know, spoke very slowly and very lowly, and he was, you know, they were just showing that he was just an awful person. And I was like, he's playing the exact same
character
in this. The guy that played Harkonnen in the original was so much better, I thought.
Yeah, in the first book and in the first movie and in the book, Baron Harkonnen is not just like a super manipulator and like a great political manipulator. He is also a pedophile. He is a murderer.
Yeah,
he like fucks kids and kills them. Like so they kind of tried to homage to that by showing that like weird spider creature thing and nodding that like that used to be a person.
Oh,
that he is sort of like messed up.
Jeez.
To a point. Yeah. Yeah. So
pretty dark stuff.
Yeah. Well, and the other piece is you really see in the book the interactions between Baron Harkonnen, Fade Rafa, who is his nephew.
Sting.
And we don't see him in this movie, but he'll be in part two.
Yeah. And it better still be played by Sting.
And yes. The Beast Robin. So you see a lot of the interactions with
Raban,
Beast Raban,
Dave Bautista. Because yeah. Otherwise, I was thinking like Robin Hood.
Yeah, and he was kind of like a
Robin.
He was kind of like a goofy fat character in the first movie, and in this one, they make him a lot more ominous and a lot more evil.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more Dave Bautista.
A lot more Bautista.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I think we'll get more Harkonnen in part two, hopefully. Because mm-hmm. The treachery that goes on with actually bringing about Fade Rafa is pretty cool.
And Zendaya in this movie, you
very
know, peppered light, in, like
very light touch,
yeah.
but she's kind of all pervasive in there. Like you see bits and pieces of her throughout the whole thing, so it feels like she's in it more than she actually is, mm-hmm. like the very end. The obviously, most people's favorite part are the giant sandworms. The crazy, they have the little piton, the thumpers that mm-hmm. that draw them away, and that
or draw them to you.
Yeah, that was my dad's favorite part when he watched this. He goes, "Oh yeah, the sandworms. I love those things." And we watched the new one, and he goes, "The sandworms aren't big enough. They need to be bigger."
So, I mean, I will say that the reason that I didn't come on the Tremors podcast was I was going to go watch Tremors, but ended up watching Dune instead.
Oh.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you can't talk about Dune without talking about the worms. Shai Hulud, may his, you know, passing cleanse the earth. One of my
blessed waters.
Favorite, not, like, subtle Easter eggs that was in there is, so the part where he's training and Gurney Halleck comes in and he's like, "You never come with your back to the door." And he's like, "I can hear your footsteps, old man." And then later when the spice harvester is going mm-hmm. and he's like on his knees, he just says, I can hear your footsteps, old man.
Yeah.
Or I recognize your footsteps, old man. And then Gurney Halleck grabs him to the untrained ear. You think he's talking about Gurney Halleck coming up, but actually it's a nod to the fact that Shai Hulud, the sandworms are known as old man of the desert. So that scene where Shai Hulud is starting to like shake tremors. Everything and he's starting to come up. It's a reference to he's known as the old man of the desert.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a great homage. It's so perfectly worded. I love that part. It was amazing.
The original one had like lightning coming out of the sandworms when they were, you know, cresting and doing. This one didn't have it. Is that in the book at all?
So
crazy
in the
lightning sandworm?
In the book, no, there's not lightning, but there is like an internal fire within the worms. Okay. So they produce an immense amount of heat. I don't think this is a spoiler, but the worms are also the source of the spice. So yeah,
the life waters.
They are the producers of spice. Like, so their existence is intertwined with the existence of the spice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. One thing that they also didn't note about, and this is part of Liet Kynes' storyline.
And that's the character that played by...
She was the scientist who was the... Harbinger, the overseer of the transition.
She was like, "Oh, you're wearing your still suit correctly. Who taught you that?"
Right.
Yeah, that was that.
Right. So
played by Max von Sydow in the original.
Yes, yeah. Max von Sydow in the original. So
R.I.P.
It was a gender flop or swap for this movie, which some people complained about. I didn't mind. I think it played really well.
Yeah.
But essentially, she is a native scientist. Her family has been scientists from the Empire for all time, basically making sure that the planet functions correctly and everything's healthy. What she reveals to Paul, what she reveals in the book to Paul, is that the Empire has had the power to make Arrakis a terraformed planet all along. If they wanted to, they could totally turn this planet into an oasis of lush grass, fields, trees, everything they could. But because the spice is so valuable, they'll never do that.
Yeah.
So that becomes part of Paul's mission is like if the desert people, the Fremen, are trying to terraform the planet and make it into an oasis, that'll never happen as long as this regime's in place. And that becomes sort of like his banner moving forward.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie, I know we're wrapping up soon, beautifully cast. It seems like it goes a little slow and they focus on other things. Like I loved it. I watched it twice. I know just seeing the trailer was very cool, and some people don't like the color palette, that it's all kind of drab and desert, but you know, that's where it takes
place.
They're
in a fucking desert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you expect?
To me, it's like, yeah, like Mad Max. It's all got that same color palette, but it's, yeah, I loved it. I thought it was lovely.
Great looking movie. Yeah, I agree.
Beautiful movie.
Well, I mean, acted.
Villanueva,
Dennis Villeneuve.
Which, amazing.
And he's the guy that did Blade Runner 2049, which also had in the original, who's the actress that wanted to play Catwoman? She was in...
Sean Young.
Sean Young was in the original Blade Runner, and she was in the original Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Is he just a big Sean Young fan?
He must be.
Weird parallel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did see a little bit of similarity between the two. Some of like the architecture of like the pyramid-y type thing. That was in 2049. That was also in Dune.
Huh.
I thought that was interesting. I'd have to go back and like... really look at it to be sure, but
and now I'm thinking about like the Fifth Element, Luc Besson. I'm sure he was inspired by Dune as well, like with that movie.
I'm sure, yeah.
Because I mean, it opens in the desert and it has a lot of weird like aliens and architecture and a chosen one who is supposed to, you know, be a blending of all these planets and skills and abilities and so.
Yeah.
All right. So here's my last question: Paul Atreides versus Luke Skywalker. Go.
What phase of Luke Skywalker's?
I mean, take them both at the utmost of their powers.
I would say Paul Atreides.
Ooh, how and why?
Sacrilege.
He is prescient. He knows what's going to happen. He knows everything and every outcome. There's not really a way to beat him if that's the case.
Todd, your retort.
Well, again, I don't know enough of the scope of Paul Atreides' powers to really answer, except to say Luke Skywalker would win. Just because he's...
Yeah, I know Jedis can also kind of somewhat see the future, but somewhat. they have to sit there and meditate and wonder, you know.
My thing is, Paul Atreides...
They use theirs mainly for fast reflexes.
And they have glow sticks.
Paul Atreides will line things up so perfectly ahead of time to where he knows what's going to happen, what needs to be in place for him to win, that he places it months in advance.
Wow.
I mean, he knows what is going to happen. He knows what's ever going to happen. So... He doesn't even need prep. He's always prepped.
It's like the...
And he can ride a worm.
Bran in Game of Thrones, like giving Arya the sword.
Oh, fucking Bran, yeah.
Exactly spot where she'll kill the Night King.
God. Yeah, I guess he is more Bran than he is Jon Snow, which fucking sucks.
Didn't mean to rain on that parade.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Well, and just Frank Herbert really kind of reacted... Herbie reacted to how much power he gave Paul in the second book. And the second book is all about kind of like dialing it back.
Mm-hmm. He nerfed him.
He didn't really nerf him as much as he was just like, oh shit. Yeah. This people are taking the wrong message from this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So this has been another episode of Cinema Vino.
Go watch Dune.
Talking some Dune. Sean Jordan, Travis Budd.
Yoy.
And hopefully if Taylor can get the cone off from around his neck.
Get the what?
You know, the cone or whatever.
Cone.
get over his rabies. He'll be back soon. But next up, we're going to do a little Halloween spectacular. We got a twofer coming up of Hocus Pocus and Trick or Treat. Trick or Treat. So stay tuned and not with a bang and whatnot.
With a whimper.
Mm.
You can listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.